everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Just Jared, the seventh in our series, I believe. And in the themes of what we talk about, we're going to continue to talk about things that are important to me and to the College of Professional Studies, but more holistically, perhaps in this conversation, a lot of thinking around what is necessary also for the future of higher education, linked to work specifically, and what that looks like and what that means, and the work that we're doing to do that. So I'm joined here by Connie and Sasha this afternoon to talk about these issues and the center that they lead for us that I lovingly call, or they tell me to lovingly call, CHEW. So we're going to CHEW on it as we have a conversation this afternoon. So I'm going to have each of them introduce themselves, as always, first, and tell a little bit about their backgrounds, and then we'll dive right in. And because I like Russian roulette, we're going to go with you first, Sasha.
That's so fun. Okay, thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here. I'm Sasha Goldman. I am director of the Center for Future of Higher Education and Work, and then assistant teaching professor here in CPS. My background would not support that title, but I'm an art historian by training.
Hey, why haven't you put any artwork in my office yet?
That's a great question. I'll work on that. That is the future of my work, maybe. I'm an art historian by training, and once starting my PhD, realized that education is really where I thrive and the work I like to do. And so I moved into a career in kind of professional development, and that landed me in the space of micro-credentials and thinking about how skills translate into work and how credentials can kind of facilitate that. And that's why I came here to Northeastern and CPS about a year ago to work with you, Jared, because we have the same ideas about that stuff.
We do it, team.
Yeah.
Connie.
Hi, thanks for having me as well. It's fantastic to be here. I'm Connie Yowell, and I believe that I am the executive director of the Center for Higher Future of Higher Education and Work with Sasha, and I'm a professor of practice in the College of Professional Studies. In the vernacular of work in the 21st century, I think I've had about 12 different jobs across my career. All have really sort of been in the arena of, I'm a developmental psychologist by training. I have worked in the policy domain for many years. I've done the academic route through tenure for many years. I was in philanthropy for more than 15 years and have come back to higher ed, among other things. I have also coached and taught tennis professionally in Africa and in several other places. I just throw that out there because it's fun too. And it's wonderful to be here.
Awesome. Yes, I would like to play tennis. Actually, maybe I want to play pickleball.
Exactly.
These things, yes, until that time comes, we'll be here. So today we're going to dive into to your center. I might touch a little bit on my own new center that I just launched a few days ago, but really wanted to look at it from the perspective of, or think about it from the perspective of two swim lanes that aren't separated but interrelated. And that loops back to something that you mentioned in your introduction, Sasha, micro-credentials and skills. And then something, and then also in the context of research around those kind of activities, because I might argue that higher education does a bad job of researching those types of opportunities. So why don't we start with an air ball? Jump ball. Give my basketball analogy. Tell us what CHEW is and a little bit about it.
Sasha's nodding her head at me, so I think I'll go first. Happy to. So the center, which was for those in CPS for a long time, used to be the Center for Future of Higher Education and Talent Strategy under Sean Gallagher. And it is a pleasure for me to come into CPS with Sasha and to begin to reimagine it and to reconstitute it.
What about me?
Well, you, whatever, Jared. And to be able to, so part of, just for setting the context, I would say, and I will also note that I love hyperbole. So, but in that context, I would say, I think that we are in a hugely transformational moment in higher ed, and perhaps one that higher ed has not seen in a century. quite frankly, and happy to enumerate why that might be. I think many of us are feeling the different pressures that are coming towards us. So in that context, it becomes really important for a university, particularly a cutting-edge innovative university like Northeastern, to have some centers that can sit at the interdisciplinary sector, in intersection of the different disciplines, as well as the sort of sit at the intersection of what really is, I think, going to define the future of higher ed, which is the future of work. And to have tentacles that are out in the world looking at everything that's going on in the field to understand where the field and others are moving for the future of higher ed and have that help inform us in terms of the decisions that we make. Really begin also to be a center that can absorb and integrate the new things that are happening, whether it's in AI or otherwise, most of which are going to be driven by technology, so that we can begin to have a place to play and think about how we want to use these new tools as we deliver the best educational experience for our students. And so I think this center becomes even more important to the university as a intersectional ground, both across sectors, but also between the university and the external world and the many things that are happening out in the world related to both the future of higher ed and the future of work.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think just to also like add some specificity to what you've described, because I think that's a really good high level overview. I think what we're hoping to do is really focus on projects, research projects that will both inform how we can make Northeastern and CPS better in an operational way, in a research way, and do research that's going to be informative to the field broadly in all of the areas you described, Connie. But like that dual focus, I think, is really the important pivot, like those links. How can we do projects and say yes to projects and do research on projects that examine the future of higher education and work for our own benefit and for the benefit of the field more broadly?
Yeah, and clearly I totally agree and want to dive into what you said, Connie, about transformational moment for higher education. I mean, I would probably even argue that higher education really hasn't changed much since the first university came to be around 1100, mm-hmm. right? So 1098, I think
university.
You're right.
Well, that's Western.
Yes, university. Western, correct. That's right. So I think
says an art historian. Outstanding.
So I want to dive into that a little bit and really think about that, because from my perspective, you all know what I think already, but from my perspective, it's really the integration of higher education work that's essential for the future.
Totally agree. And I do think it part of understanding that, to your point, Jared, is that public education, our higher education institutions are designed for stasis. And they do that exceptionally well. And in many ways, that's what you want education to do as a institution in a democratic society. However, we've never been in a time of change like we're in right now. And so it is incumbent upon the university to really think about and understand its own process of change. So there's both this notion of what is the future of higher ed and what are we changing to, but there's also this process of how in the world do we change given that's not part of our DNA. Mm-hmm. And so that's also a part of what, as Sasha so eloquently noted, is really a part of what we hope is a focus of the center, is how do you think about what is really relevant to CPS and to the university, as well as what's happening in the field.
And if we're integrating work and learning, what better place to do it than Northeastern,
yeah.
Right? And I think Connie's existing work on experiential learning research here at the university that we're bringing into the center, that's like a pivotal piece of research that we can stand on and say, we're really looking into the efficacy of co-op, how it works, what makes it work, and what systems make it function. And if we can understand that type of system, how much better can we be at making all of education integrated with work?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think also for me, right, it also is an opportunity to think about the fact that, you know, even as not as long ago as the in late 90s when I started college, yeah, I had to think about that, right? Yeah, you went to university to get information.
Mm-hmm.
Now information is available to anyone and everyone through the internet, and it has been for decades at this point. See, now you know how long ago I went to college. And then with things like the GPTs, you can query those and they'll give you the answer. And I don't even have to use Google, or of course Google's Gemini gives me the answer at the top of the search. So, you know, that changes the way we need to think about education and work also. And one of the reasons why I like micro-credentials and skill-based learning linked to competencies, I mean, the thing that really fries me the most is, and I've said this like 4 times this week in public settings, so it's no surprise, I'll say it again. Well, what really bothers me is when I talk to an employer and they say to me, students that are graduating don't have the skills they need to do the job. We need to train them for 5 more years, right? It means that all of the industry of higher education is missing the mark someplace. And even more drastically in the life sciences in which I work, the students coming out of the vocational technical high schools are more prepared in the skill space than we're the people that are graduating from many of the higher education institutions. Yes. So why don't you tell me a little bit about micro-credentials and skill-based learning and how that integrates with the center, and then I'll primer this by giving you some time to think, perhaps, Connie, about specific projects that you're working on. Okay.
Yep. Well, the way I got to micro-credentials and the way I met you, Jared, was via understanding exactly the problem that you described. And that problem exists at in the industry level when hiring managers are trying to hire talent, and that talent does not have the skills that they want them to have. Well, I was looking at that at the doctoral level. So PhD students were not able to get the jobs that they were being trained for. That job is faculty careers, and one could argue that they're not actually being trained for that job either, but that's another conversation. But what I really tried to do was build out a language of skills via micro-credentials to mark what it was that they knew how to do, not what they knew, because in your PhD program, you're learning how to know stuff. You're not learning how to do stuff. And so we gave them a language of skills that really described what they were knowing how to do, and that's really what micro-credentials can do, right? It's a translational mechanism that I think gives both the learner and earner of the micro-credential and the educational provider and the talent seeker the same language so that they can all translate that skill across the board and be able to talk about, this is what I know how to do, therefore these are my training gaps. Can I fit into that job and you fill that need? If not, what other training do I need in order to fill those gaps? So that's the basics.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting too, and it's probably a story for another day that is interesting to me to think about is also when you think about PhDs, fundamentally, PhDs are trained to be researchers.
Yes.
And the industry looks for people with terminal degrees to do a lot of things that aren't research related.
Yes.
So there's opportunities to think about how we use professional doctorates also to fill roles that are not necessary to have a PhD for, which is something that I deal with a lot in the life sciences and have those conversations. Shameless plug for our new doctor of professional studies. It's again a story for another day. But Connie, why don't you give us some ideas on what you're chewing on in Chew?
I love that you're teaching us how to use the Chew acronym. I think it's working. Folks can give us feedback on whether or not they think it's far too silly, but I'm actually really liking it.
I don't really care what other people think. I love
it. There you go. So let me give you 2 seconds also of background on how I've come to micro-credentials and skills, and then jump in a little bit on what we're chewing on. I was a director of education grant making at MacArthur for 15 years. MacArthur's a large global foundation in Chicago. We had the privilege of being a little bit at the cutting edge of grant making on digital media and learning. And so in 2010, we were doing an enormous amount of research on how kids were learning with digital media and realized that most of the learning was A, interest-driven, and B, project or experience-based. So 2 things about interest-driven and project-based is, on the project-based side, if you are in the middle of a project, it's almost impossible to really pull out and understand what skills you're getting while in that project. And it's equally impossible for faculty or teachers to be able to assess the individual skills that are embedded in the project. And so that was one thing. The second thing was, if students are following their interests, you have to be able to map the skills and competencies that they're learning onto a pathway that connects their interest into jobs and other things in the world. And so what we wanted to do was really figure out, not how do you do a 16-week curriculum, because from a developmental psychologist perspective, that's going to hold nobody's attention unless it's mandated. However, if you can stack or build badges or credentials into pathways that both connect what students are interested in along a series of projects that also connect to a job and demonstrate the skills they need and can tell them, okay, awesome that you can do that. Here's the next thing. Then you've got a set of tools that enable motivation while also enabling the educational purpose.
Giving them a sticker.
It's more than a sticker. Can I spend 1 second
on that?
Because it's going to relate to what we're going to talk about and what I think is so critical in education. Sticker is flat and doesn't contain data. We worked on with Mozilla was really creating an open badge standard that would carry an enormous amount of data that both is relevant to the learner, relevant to the employer, and relevant to the educational system, so that it becomes a three-dimensional transcript that has meaning to all the relevant parties and is something that the student can carry with them. That, for me, is a core enabler of transformation in an educational system. And what we want to make sure that Jared, I'm going to speak for you just for a second, but I think in CPS and at Northeastern, we want to lead in that.
Absolutely.
We should be building these core enablers that enable this transformation to happen.
100%.
And so we're taking at the center at CHU, we are taking bites. Oh my God, this actually works.
Yes.
We are taking bite-sized pieces of the work to try to begin to build these core enablers. And so that's looking in particular sectors, whether it's in advanced manufacturing, whether it's in bioinnovation or the life sciences, whether it's a question of what does admission look like to Northeastern. These are projects that we want to start unpacking and really start and build them in the context of these core enablers. And Sasha, you might want to go a little bit deeper on the specifics of some of these to give examples.
Well, I mentioned the experiential learning research is one of the projects we're working on. The Massachusetts Micro-Credential Coalition is another one where we're really trying to bring all of, bring academic institutions in the state, industry in the state and nonprofit organizations in the state all together to talk about how important IUC is the idea of the sticker that has the data sitting on top of it, right? To understand the value of this and get them all on the same page in terms of that language so that every time someone is getting one of these credentials, we all agree on what that is and why it's valuable to the life sciences.
And in higher ed, we recognize them.
Yes.
Across institutions.
That's key.
Exactly.
Yep.
Across institutions. And being collaborative in that way, I think, is really important. And it's something that micro-credentials actually really enables us to do in a way that degrees don't.
Yep.
Let's see, some of the other projects we're working on, a couple of research projects with different AI tools. That's going to be a big piece, I think, of what we do. Some other things are in the works.
Competency-based admissions.
Yes, competency-based admissions is something that we are also trying to think about and thinking about how to build out a competency architecture that we can kind of lay onto all of the variety of projects that come in the future as one of these core enablers that you talked about.
Which would be really important to me in the college since we use performance-based admissions.
Exactly.
Right. Yep, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that those are all great points. I mean, the other thing that I think is really interesting, I want to get to this point before I forget, so I'm all over the place like normal. Interesting for me to think about the future of higher education and work related to colleges of professional studies like CPS. Generally speaking, I think in the world, at least within our industry, which is higher education, people look at colleges of professional studies as a place where, rightly so, people who are working go back to school and generally get a master's degree. For me, that's, to me, also there's an opportunity in that space specifically to reimagine what a college of professional studies does and should be doing. I mean, it links to the things that I talk about all the time, access, scale, technology, innovation, and partnership. And then the three P's, people, platforms, and
process.
So really thinking about those kind of things. But also fundamental to my views on education is linking it to research. So having research in a college of professional studies, which is really, I would argue, rare, is fundamentally important to me. But that's me, and I'm one person. Would love your thoughts on how you think of professional schools moving forward and what the role for research might be in those schools related to, you know, the center that you're both leading, for the center I created, and to other things that we might be thinking about. Because I think it's also an opportunity to use colleges of professional studies in this moment to be the driver for the future of education.
Yeah.
I'm biased as the dean, obviously.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, and it's part of the reason why I sort of left. I wanted to move and shift out of doing administrative work, which is a wonderful thing to do, and move over to CPS and be a part of the center, which is to say, as much as I think Northeastern is cutting edge on connecting and work and learning with co-op, I think there's a huge wide open field still to be thinking about the actual integration of what we're learning with work. I think the schools that have the most flexibility, expertise from their professors of practice, and are most geared towards really looking hard at how to integrate are extension schools and schools of professional practice. Mm-hmm. And so I think you've got to look, what I've learned in the world of innovation is that you innovate on the edges. And as you innovate on the edges, that can begin to be a forcing function to begin to transform what the core looks like. So if we think of traditional academic 250 students in a classroom, sage on the stage approach to learning as sort of the core of what higher ed has always looked like, schools of professional studies are the edge of innovation and are really the opportunity, I think, where folks are most willing to throw things at the wind and really see what's going to happen. And I think the schools of professional practice are going to be closest to how the world of work is changing. Mm-hmm. And we need that information and that intel, and it's just absolutely critical.
Yeah, and to that point quickly before you go, Safa, I'm putting on notice, I suppose, our practitioner faculty and all of our faculty, because that, my estimation is they're an underutilized resource, and we can do a heck of a lot more together.
Well, and I think it's really important to also think about what learners need, right? And who learners of the world are right now. We have 43.1, I think that's like number million people in the United States who have some college or no degree, right? And this is the type of place where they can come to complete a degree. They can build in different types of pathways for themselves. That's something we're looking at and working on and trying to figure out. And so I think we're actually uniquely positioned in this transitional moment as well as this type of place that has existed on the out. What did you call it?
The edges.
To think about being, you know, if you're on the edge, you have the largest circumference or like surface area to reach the people or whatever. You know what I'm saying? I'm a visual.
You got it.
I'm bringing, you know, we have a much wider tent to bring people into, and I think it's actually enabling us to take advantage of a moment that a lot of people are finding really restrictive.
Yeah. Okay, I want to build on that point just for one second and connect it to, I think, a little bit of what I heard in another podcast, a Just Jared podcast, which is to say, we're so far.
People listen, by the way.
Which is to say, we are talking today a lot about what we started with, micro-credentials and competencies and skills. I think, as Sasha has rightly noted, the notion of lifelong learning, that there are huge opportunities, needs, and challenges, both in the context of mental health and relationship, and also huge needs for networking and social capital. I have two sons, one's 23 and one's 25. They both are doing their master's degrees as much for the relationships and the networking and the opportunity to re-explore what a mission-driven working life would look like, which 18 to 22, you're not really there. And so that's part of why they've come back to sort of continue their professional studies. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see that more and more and more. And I think we're also going to see that in the workplace with people really wanting to be treated well mm-hmm. and to be able to have community at work. And I think that'll be part of what we chew on at the center and start really thinking about what that means for the future of education and the future of work.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think that's fundamentally, if I look at my own life experience, right, from 18 to 22, that was not what I was thinking about or what I realized. Not only that, I would argue, and I can argue this because it's me, about me. I didn't know who I was.
Talk to your wife.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Right? Between 18 and 22, I didn't know who I was. And yeah. Even between 22 and the end of my PhD, I because I was stuck in the traditional, and it was fine. I was in a traditional PhD program that functioned traditionally. Like, I still didn't have the opportunity to explore that, right? And I think over the post-educational experience for me, I've been able to do that professionally, which is why when I go back to grad school friends or my mentor, she laughs at me and she's like, you are, no, this is not what I thought you'd be doing. Exactly, because you thought I'd be behind the bench and talking to no one ever, because that was my default, and definitely not traveling. But I think that's right. And I think the other thing that's interesting is, you know, bringing bringing the work into that network that's part of the educational experience for those students is going to drive things. It also speaks to what I fundamentally believe, and again, I've said many times over and over again. And my grandfather worked for MetLife for 45 years and retired, right? Mm-hmm. Like, your career, generally speaking, is a mosaic of jobs mm-hmm. and different jobs that need different skills. So learning needs to be either integrated into that mosaic, but your career and learning should be a mosaic together that gets you the opportunity, gets you to where you want to go professionally and gives you those skills. Also fundamentally, and you can both react to this, fundamentally the thing that I also think is essential is that in a pathway-based learning strategy or skill-based learning strategy, the foundation should be whatever you want to call them, soft skills, power skills, so communication, problem solving, critical thinking, conflict resolution, you could name a whole bunch more. And if you build on that foundation, then you can tack on technical skills or other skills, and then it's easier to navigate different opportunities within a career, as opposed to me, who's a trained life scientist, and if I wanted to go back and, you know, do business, I'm going to probably have to get another degree.
Yes. Well, and I think in the same way you said, you don't know yourself when you're 18 to 22. I mean, knowing what you want to do with the rest of your life when you're 18 is really, really challenging. Any high school student that is like a family friend or a cousin of mine that says like, I'm trying to decide which college to go to. If I can't, I've convinced many of them to take a gap year. Like, just a little bit of time, the least amount of time possible. You have to think a little bit more about what this huge decision is going to be. And it doesn't have to impact the rest of your life. You can make other pivots and you can make other changes, but it will be a mosaic, and it's okay to pick one thing and then make a pivot.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the new mentoring program that CPS is laying out is really critical.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I wanted to do a big plug for that. I think in this context, it's wonderful.
Yeah, we got 140 applicants to that program, which is huge.
That's fantastic.
They're reviewing them on this day, which for us is July 10th. Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I also think that, I mean, this is sort of unrelated to the topic, perhaps, but the other thing that I think is important that needs to be better articulated from our perspective as educators is there's some responsibility on the learner to own their learning and their pathways and their strategies, which is all that between 18 and 22 is a tough concept sometimes, but even beyond that, because I think there's a lot of things going on. I mean,
can I ask you a question?
You can do whatever you want.
Can you talk to us about your new center?
I was just going to ask that question. Yes.
Because I think
we work well together.
You've talked about how important it is to have research here and your path. Like, why is it important to have that center here, and what's your goal with that?
Yeah, so as most of you know, I'm a life scientist, or at least was a life scientist. Now I just send a lot of emails. That's all good. So, you know, over my time here at Northeastern, I've operated a lab that was about upskilling and reskilling the workforce in the biotech industry in Massachusetts. And then when COVID came, had the opportunity to set up the COVID lab for the university and run that. And then through all those processes, integrating into what the life sciences are and talking to companies and being out and about and talking to people, it became clear to me that there were gaps in talent for the life sciences. So that sort of spiraled me into changing the way I operated the spaces in which I was responsible to really think about workforce development programs and fundamentally lean into 8-week training programs that are skill-based. And we could argue, and I could argue, you know, whether those are, how effective those are, but at least it can't be the only thing, but it's a starting place. So, you know, that's super important to me. The whole idea of apprenticeships and registered apprenticeships, like I'm leaning into that. It's, you both know, and now you all know, all in on that to see really what we can do and how that links to education, but also to work. And we'll continue to do that. And then I was thinking about that as higher education is changing around us, as the political landscape is changing the way in which the life sciences industry has to operate, and thinking about the state of Massachusetts writ large and what exists in Massachusetts, and not only in Massachusetts, clearly, but we have some of the best hospitals in the world, we're the biotech hub of the world. The state is investing heavily in AI and the AI tech hub. People don't think about often, but we're a leader in quantum, we're a leader in robotics. There's all these things that are happening here, and they're happening in their own swim lanes, which fundamentally is what the future of, for me, the life sciences looks like. Once upon a time, some of the hardest roles to fill in the life sciences were regulatory affairs or quality roles, which is my own expertise, or became my own expertise. But then I quickly realized over the last year that it's really about data and AI and life sciences. And there's not a lot of happening in that space programmatically. So the center will dive into that and leverage those connectivities across that space and then hopefully link to hospitals, because products that are being made are going to have to, many of them now are personalized, and personalized medicine changes the landscape. But the goal is for the center to really also then to think about application-based research, right? So, you know, if you're an engineer and you talk about TRL, technology readiness levels, right? I'm thinking towards the high ends, 7 to 9 on that scale, right? Like, what can we help do in the research space that can be funded by industry or others? That has immediate impact into the industry. Because for me, it's about patients and what we can do for patients, and then learning and how we can prepare people to work in the future. So it's an opportunity for me to sort of take my educational philosophy, a mini version of perhaps what I think about and see the college professional studies being able to do in all the industries in which we exist or work or educate in. And use that as some momentum. I think also it's an opportunity for Northeastern's been a leader in analytical chemistry for a long time, and it's an opportunity to think about the basic research we do and how we can translate it.
I think that's really great. Like, now I'm thinking, oh, maybe our center should be researching your center, you know, because I think you're doing something that's like applied in discipline, and we're thinking about like the way that it'll function at an educational level within CPS and then largely within the educational field. So I like that you're moving forward with the idea of research in CPS located in these two places that have very different kind of objectives, but similarly are digging in similar ways. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I would envision that this is not the strategy, but just here's a thought experiment. So imagine we have the Center for Applied Innovation. Then we have the Center for Advanced Manufacturing. We have the Center for Artificial Intelligence. I don't know. I'm making these things up, and we're not going to do all those things. And then you all chew on what they're doing and thinking about and how they can evolve, right? Because, yeah. You know, the connectivity that I try to build across the life sciences that lives sort of in the center, thinking about the Amgen biotech experience, which is professional development for middle school and high school teachers, then bringing that to the classroom, right? So people understand what biotech is, which is outreach and engagement. Get those students excited about the industry in which most people don't know anything about. Mm-hmm. And it's the largest part of our economy in the state. So that's a problem. Then they can go to workforce development programs. They can go to an apprenticeship program. They can go to a community college. Or they could go to work. And then it's about that mosaic, right? They can consume or bite off what they wanted to do educationally throughout their process and link it to the programs. And yes, great, I'd love them to come here and do that at Northeastern, but for me, you know, like I've said to others before, I'm like the Santa Claus on Miracle on 34th Street. I don't have what you want. I'm going to send you to the place you need to go to be successful. Because fundamentally, it's students and patients that drive me.
I think there's a real brilliance to that, I might say. Because I think what you're, part of what it does is it leverages the very purpose of a center at a university.
Yes.
For the first thing. So I think it's going to be a really long time before universities can actually move out of their silos
right.
and become interdisciplinary. It's just a really hard lift to start with. It is centers that actually pull at the interdisciplinarity and to do it in response to problems in the world of work, in the ways that you're doing it with the Bioinnovation Center is exactly what the world needs and will then demand that we look at that example and use that as an opportunity to transform what we do, except that higher ed is a horrible institution for learning. It does not learn it from itself.
No, it does not.
And so to have these two centers existing exactly as you said, Sasha, right next to each other
yeah.
seems exactly right to me
yeah.
to be able to sort of leverage back and forth.
Absolutely.
The other thing I'll say is that education by definition is not a leading innovator. Nor should it ever be, because it is people's, because it is a staircase into upward mobility, or is supposed to be, it can't be a place of high risk for a whole lot of folks.
That's right.
So you don't want to be the leading innovator, but then to be positioned right next to biology and medicine tends to be a leading innovator because there is an urgency to solve for disease
100%.
And to manage patients well. And education often follows the example of medicine in terms of how it innovates. So to really position it next to a bioinnovation center and to really sort of pull from that for how we think about the future of higher ed is perfect.
We'll be watching you.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah.
It's a fun thing to do, I think, in both in all of those cases. That's exactly what I'm thinking and always think about what I do. It's also really interesting in that context, right? I was at the State House yesterday talking to some legislators and interns, and one of the interns said to me, so everything you're talking about here is awesome. Like, are they changing the medical school curriculum so that biotech in the future? I'm like, well, not so much, but the idea is that I can help them do that over time. Because like I said, everything's in the state. Like, we need to drive that. And it's also interesting to think about, you know, how we not only work, and the more that we can relate and cross lanes and do things, the more access to funding we have and diverse funding, which is fun should, regardless of what moment in time we exist in, should be a strategy. You should never put all your eggs in one bucket. It's my strategy.
Yep.
And that's also what the center does, because clearly it needs to support itself. And it should not be place-based. So we exist across the world. So it's coming towards the end. I'm going to give each an opportunity to freestyle your last comments.
Freestyle?
What would you like to say that you didn't say, or what did I not ask that I should have asked?
That's a good question.
I'll go first. Please. And you need a second to think. I'll just throw out sort of a little bit of circle back to where we began, which is to say to the folks in CPS and whoever's listening to the podcast that this is an extraordinary moment in higher ed, and it only will lead to great possibility if everyone participates and joins in the work. And so I just really encourage folks, whether it's with Jared Center, our center, Learn Lab, some of the other opportunities that have been created across CPS, which are extraordinary, that your participation just deeply matters.
I think that's true, but I think, here's what I'll say. I've been reflecting on being here for a year now, and one thing that I think really keeps the CPS team and talent together. One, it's shared. It's really good at identifying good people to work with. But two, I think most of the people here really care about doing impactful work, and that has been extremely meaningful to me. And so I think that the future of work, it goes to, you know, what you said about your sons, right? Finding mission-driven work and figuring out a way that we can help look at the future of higher education and work to be more mission-driven and student-centered is what I really hope we can achieve. We'll see.
Yeah, no, we will achieve.
Oh.
Exactly. And you know, for all of those reasons, actually, are the reasons that I was interested in being the dean of the college and seeing what we could do. And just for fun side note, what I've created in the Center of Bioinnovation was the argument I made to the provost at the time that I could actually lead the college and do that because they are meant to be interdigitated, essentially. It's not a real word, but it's fine. Or it is,
we'll and it's used in for it.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks, Connie and Sasha, for being here to talk to me this afternoon about skills and research and the opportunities in higher education. I've said it many times, and people think I'm crazy, but for me, it's an opportunity to deconstruct and reconstruct, or more lovingly, blow up higher education to see what we can do and where we can go. And that's my intent, because at the end of the day, you know, the student is our customer, the employer is our customer also, and we want to make sure that we're serving both populations well. So with that, I want to thank you all for listening and to remind you that if you see me walking on campus, I'm not doctor, I'm not dean, I'm not professor, I'm just Jared.